So we're walking around the garden. There's these lovely established oak trees, hundreds of years old. But Beth wanted to plant contrasting trees, and she used this wonderful term, painting the sky.
Where exactly are we now?
We're in the water garden area of the Beth Chatter Gardens in Colchester, Essex. My name's Dave Ward. I have a rather grand title of gardener nursery director, but I also sweep the patio, clean the toilets, and do car parking, whatever.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're very welcome to another episode of The Sod Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Sod Show Garden Podcast.
Which part of the garden are we in now,
Dave? We're walking through the water garden area. We have lots of very widely contrasting conditions in a very small area. Garden itself is about 7 acres or so. And we have dry sandy soil, gravel garden, very dry area. Just a few yards away where we are now, the water gardens, very damp soil, natural ponds. We have very dry shade at the back of the garden, just over under the oak trees. We go up a bit further, clay, so we have a very wide range of conditions here.
My 8-year-old daughter had to draw a picture of a witch for Halloween, and it only had from the legs down. And normally when children draw a witch, it's got a big long nose and it's got a broomstick. Yeah. That's what I expected, but apparently that wasn't the case. Mm-hmm. And she had very colourful tights on and pointy shoes, and I thought, that's fantastic, and got like a proper, almost Machiavellian-esque picture frame for it, and I hung it up on the wall. In a nutshell, when I see people's gardens, that question of why did you do that starts to evolve. You start to get this almost childlike thing of, why did Beth split the garden into the dry part and the wet part?
She didn't split it. It's what we're all about here is about gardening with the conditions that we have. We don't want to change the conditions. You know, we need to garden with what we have. We need to grow plants that are suited to those particular conditions. Yeah. So we didn't create a dry garden because we wanted to create a dry garden.
It was just dry, very dry,
sandy, gravelly soil in that particular area of the garden. And likewise here, a very low area, sort of like a sump, all the surrounding fields draining into this area, a natural sort of ditch running through it, very wet area. So Beth never created gardens because she wanted a particular garden. She gardened with the conditions here and made the most of the conditions that we have.
I don't want to simplify this down for the listeners at home, but essentially to translate this, it might need it, and I apologise for that, but is it a case of if your garden, I say floods a little, has what I would call, or what maybe of a more modern home might meet, which is the builder's soil. In fact, in books I have going back to 1930 mm-hmm. and 1922, they actually note the builder's soil as well. So I don't think it's changed a whole lot in 100 years.
Builders are much the same.
But what you're saying is essentially, yeah, you might have that. What Beth and you and the team did was essentially said, okay, well, we're going to work with that.
We did, obviously.
To an extent.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we're very lucky because these are quite sort of natural conditions. Obviously, in a sort of new build area where you have completely false soil or maybe topsoil's just been spread over some rubble, you know, then that's a different matter. Then, obviously, you do have to think about it a bit more. But here, you know, we're very lucky with these sort of quite natural conditions that we haven't wanted to change. It's about going along, you know, with nature, gardening with nature, growing the plants from all over the world. They might come from, say, in the dry garden, for example, all over. Australia, big eucalyptus, South America, Europe, of course, Mediterranean. But they're all suited to those conditions. And because they're suited to those conditions from all over the world, they tend to look good together because they have the same characteristics. Likewise, in the water garden, you come down here, plants from all over the world, there's looking at now big clumps of grasses from Asia, North American eupatoriums, but because they're suited conditions here, they've got big leaves because they've got moisture down here, so they all tend to look good together. It's just about, which is another, you know, what Beth was really skilled at, was about putting the plants together, using foliage and form, shape and texture, even with the trees, you know, the oak trees I mentioned and the more contrasting conifers, and swamp cypresses, plants like that. So, you know, that's what we're all about. This term, right plant, right place, not only applies to the conditions, it also applies to the look of plants as well.
We're in the wet garden at the minute. There are ducks here. It's a little bit misty. We'll take a walk around the corner and we'll see you there in a sec. If you listen at home, you just keep listening.
We're walking up from our water garden up a slope into what we call our reservoir garden. And this is a garden that's not really part of the garden that's not really defined by its conditions. It's an area of clay soil, basically. And we were talking about new builds and soil imported, etc. This clay actually wasn't naturally here when Beth came here way back in 1960. It was actually put onto the sand and gravel from a big reservoir just behind us when the reservoir was dug out. So it was spread on top of sand and gravel. And the idea was to incorporate it to make slightly better soil, but that never really happened. So Beth sort of planted it up with, back in the 1970s, with quite low maintenance shrubs, trees, etc. And over the years, we sort of discovered it was an area that people perhaps were just walking through, not really paying too much attention to, just to get from our water garden over to our lovely woodland garden. So about 3 years ago now, we decided we'd strip it all out and start again, try and cultivate the soil, which Beth never really had a chance to. And it took us a good 15, 18 months to knock that clay into shape, adding lots of mushroom compost to it. We added 150 tonnes to an area of about 750 square metres. We practically hand dug it over once, if not twice, when we ended up digging all the soil in, the compost in, and have planted it up with lots of perennials, grasses, and now it's an area that people can get in amongst the plants. They can get right up close rather than just walk around. And we're finding people now lingering here. Everything's labelled so they can take a note of the plants. So it's added a lot more interest and given us the experience of a clay soil as well, and how to...
150 ton is approximately 7.5 large trucks of spent mushroom compost.
Yes. Yeah.
Which my earliest memory of that was in the middle of winter picking rhubarb, and okay, it had got dark and we'd been forgotten about. I was going through college, it's a long story. There's a horticultural reason to this. My intention wasn't to make you smile. We actually got into the spent mushroom compost because the heat that it gave off.
Oh yeah.
When you introduced it in here, to bring it back to a more horticultural logic reasoning, why in a soil that couldn't be worked, what did it bring, one, to the table, and two, how did it change what you could then plant?
Spent mushroom compost is a wonderful material. It's inert, it's quite easy to work with, and it does contain a bit of lime, which does actually chemically separate clay particles. I think the big word is flocculation, and I was at college a lot longer ago than you were, but that word has stuck in my mind. It's very rotted manure, from the mushroom industry. Great material to work, but it does smell as well. And it's hot when those lorries arrive, yeah, as you say.
Steaming
away.
Yeah.
Stank. So, we added that on. We incorporated it in. We dug it. We rotivated it into the topsoil, the clay, as much as we could. The weather was not helping. It was quite wet then. We're sand and gravel gardeners, we're not really used to this clay, so it's quite an experience. And then, of course, we had hoped to plant in the following spring, but the weather just didn't allow us to, so we ended up putting a green manure on the area for the summer and got back to working it again the following winter when the weather allowed. So we put a lot of effort, and that is, again, it comes back to Beth's way of gardening. Soil preparation, thorough soil preparation, is as important, if not more important, than this plant choice, this, you know, growing plants in the correct conditions. Because another of Beth's sayings, you can't give plants the worst you have. You've got to give them the best you can possibly provide.
In domestic gardens, there's machinery and stuff going off in the background. It's a real working garden. It's one thing that I would say when I'm asked about why didn't you get X job that you designed, but usually it's because I've gone in and it's the soil is we're back to it again. It's the old rubble thing. And I say, well, look, it's got to come out in order to give the plants the best start, because the client has said they want this style of planting, and I can't give them a bet garden, understandably, you know.
Well, again, I mean, it's one problem we do have. You know, you can't, for example, our dry garden, it's on sand and gravel. You can't have that kind of garden with those kind of plants, which do want quite sharp drainage. If you have a clay soil, you know, you've got much different palette of plants, varied palette of plants that you can use. So, it's again, it's just all about, we have these conditions, these are the plants, and we work with, and these are lists that Beth's husband, actually, Andrew Chatto, he was a fruit farmer by trade, but he was a real ecologist, and he'd done lots of studying of plants, where they grew in the wild, the combinations of plants, the habitat, and he put together so much information for Beth to dip into and create these, what we have, quite static lists here of plants, so we know which plants are going to grow hot, dry, dry shade, water, damp soils, or now our clay soil here, our improved clay soil. So we don't tend to step outside of those strict lists that we have. We might occasionally just try something, but we know, for example, this summer we've had a very dry summer, and we know we've pushed the boundaries in our dry garden in recent years by growing a few things. But when you get to a really dry summer like we've had, it will sort out the men from the boys as such.
Let's take a little bit of a walk. You stay listening. I've never been here before. This is a real treat. I've seen the photographs. I've read about it. We'll get to that in a little bit.
They're quite noisy sometimes, aren't they?
That's okay. No, they're fine. So the volunteers were actually coming in there, and they're talking. It's wonderful when you hear people who work in gardens who giggle and smile, and you can hear it. It's almost melodic in itself. We're in the woodland part. There's some machinery going off in the background. We'll only stay here for a minute or two. I hope it's not too noisy for you at home. But you've literally got so much going on. The leaves are falling down on top of the plants. The trees are losing their leaves. Mm-hmm. The snowdrops will have come and gone by the time this, and the place will be booming back into spring. This is the best way to say it. If I was the BBC, you'd hear crunching sounds of leaves underneath my feet. So it's just me and the head Don. How difficult, or how do I say it? If I said woodland garden, most people would say, well, it's a few trees. And to an extent, maybe they're right. But how do you garden, or how more difficult is it to garden? Because down by the water garden, or on the front entrance in to the Beth Chatto Gardens, you can see where the plants are more individual. The plants are a little bit more petite. Mm-hmm. You can see where there's a little bit more care and attention to where here, once the walkways are relatively speaking clean, you're sort of okay as the head man over the gardens. Is that an okay way to put that? Have I done you a disservice?
Well, obviously we're standing in the woodland garden in November, as you say, when the leaves are falling off the trees. It's a different matter in the spring, as all woodland gardens are spring gardens. So there will be, we've just walked past some very early snowdrops just starting to flower, and they will be starting in flower all the way through November, December, January into their main season, February, March, along with a myriad of other woodland plants, all coming up to take advantage of the light that's there early in the year, the moisture that's still in the ground. Obviously, as the leaf canopy starts to cover, the flower tends to sort of fade away, and then you're left with this rather more natural, as you say, this sort of ground cover for most of the summer. It's a very quiet, shaded area, which has been quite... Machine alert, so there's one of our gardeners just going past.
That's okay. That's okay.
The gardeners are busy at the moment, sort of just tidying up, just making sure the customers can see where the paths are to walk through.
Do you get that, though? I think the greatest cliche that I get is, oh, it must be coming into your quiet time now, and I'm going, are you joking? Because one of the greatest things I learned how to do was hardwood cuttings, one, Mm-hmm. My good friend Rosie Hardy and me had a very good conversation about this, but essentially propagation of the perennials, in particular the Rudbeckias. I think myself and Rosie spoke about something else. But because I saw that you had, can I call it a garden centre, one, and two?
Plant centre.
Plant centre, okay. Because you propagate the plants from here as well, so
absolutely, yeah, 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 yeah. No, we the garden is very important for the nursery. The nursery and the garden have grown up alongside each other. Beth started the nursery almost when she started the garden to grow plants for her garden, and then of course to get a bit of income, she started a sort of small nursery and started to sell plants, and now we have quite a large nursery, mail order all over the country, and the two are very important to each other. The garden is our stock for many plants. We take cuttings, we collect seed, we try not to go into the garden too much to dig plants up. We have stock bed areas for that. So, say plants, you mentioned Rudbeckias, we do that from division, hostas, all kinds of things we do from division, we have stock beds for. But the garden is very important, and it's quite unusual, really. I think that the two here, you know, work well together, and they desperately need each other.
Well, I think the line I gave to you was, it's all right for Peter to have dreams, but sometimes the dreams need to pay the electricity bill as well, the odd time, or the water, or essentially you need a benefactor in the case of show gardens for very good reasons. And I'll give you a funny one for you listening at home. I know you don't know this, but I took a wander around before we bumped into you, and what I've never taken a photograph of potpourri before, nor am I a fan of it, but the reason I stopped and took a photograph was because it notes that all of the flowers and the things that go into potpourri, now I'm reminded of candles, and I find nothing romantic about either of those two things, but none to the point, it was that all of the ingredients of it are taken from the garden here.
Yes.
Which is amazing. That's what blew my mind.
Well, that's something we just done recently. We used to do it many, many years ago. Beth used to make potpourri for herself, for the house. And, you know, we just started that tradition up again. So, yeah, that's a really nice connection to have.
Just wonderful. It's the only time I've ever actually wanted to buy potpourri in my lifetime. That's the giggle that you're going to get for the minute, you ladies listening at home. We're going to take a walk, actually, up towards the shop. And you keep listening, you in podcast land. And we'll get back to you in a bit. I should add, if you want to get in touch, or you want me to put you in touch with the team here, they run a fantastic range of courses throughout the year as well, as by the way. Just send me a note at Sodshow on Twitter, facebook.com/Sodshow, Sodshow.com. Talk to you in a second. So we've literally just walked into the garden. I should go back. Hold on a second. Watch this. Just bear with me. Yeah. I'm recording this into the tail of an iPhone at the minute. The Sideshow has gone full circle all the way back to 8 years ago. But my wry wit aside, we've just walked into the plant centre, I have that correct. And what is striking in the plant centre, apart from the fact that it is meticulously perfect in everything, it's that the plants are split on my left-hand side into shade garden plants, dry garden plants, and damp. If every garden centre I went to did their plant layout in this way, life would be such an amazing place. And it's not just that, it's broken down further again. So where am I now? Well, let me skew across and I'll give you one. I've left Dave a little bit behind me just for a second. I don't mean to be rude, Dave, sorry. But we're gone into the dry one. And we've got I don't know. Let me see if there's one that you might know at home. There's Helianthemum. And it says Wisley White, rock rose, sun rose, a spreading shrub with narrow dark green leaves and white flowers with yellow centres. $4.75. That's pretty good value. There's people laughing here. Isn't that amazing?
That's some of our volunteers, yeah. We're very lucky we have a good volunteer for.
Sorry, Dave. You'll have to say it into this one. Why? Is it my imagination, or are you unique in how you lay out your plants with those large, big, shade, damp, essentially, labels?
Probably not unique now, but a lot of garden centres you do go into now have perhaps a bench or two dedicated to certain plants. Perhaps they picked up on the hot, dry weather this year and had a bench of drought-loving plants, etc. But generally, it's sort of A to Z, all the arranged shrubs, trees, climbers, perennials, etc. But we've just, for us, it's just, and it was for Beth, the whole garden, the whole right plant, right place, it was just common sense. It's just, you know, you have these conditions. Why do you want to go to plants that want damp soil? And you only have plants that, you know, you only need plants that will grow in your dry soil. So that's the way we've always had it.
For those of you listening at home who knew Beth and who knew the gardens, I have to apologise because there was conversation before all of this started. What had happened was the opening line that you heard, which was essentially painting that picture, which led me to my daughter as painting what she thought was amazing. And now that's made me think of John Lennon explaining why Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds was the title of that song. And I think he says his son walks in and he said, "What's that?" And he said, "Oh, that's Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds." And he went, "Okay." And I just think it's amazing that people can paint with their eyes closed and just have a big picture. But when it's things that photosynthesize and landscape, it's the ultimate gift, isn't it? That you can do it and you heard them. I didn't pay them to come in, but you hear them laughing. But the bit that you missed before I pressed the record button was we were talking about Barbara Segal. And Barbara and Marcus had done a book. She's a former guest of the show. I interviewed her in my kitchen in Dublin. I think we were having tea. We veered off the point, as invariably I do. But the intro to that book was written by Beth. Okay. And so we got talking about Barbara. So I know the interview was the wrong way around, but that's okay. It's only to you. It's not how it actually... Yeah, you get what I'm saying? Because with Barbara, there's like a... If Barbara said to me, "Pete, that's okay, you should have some of that," I think I'd take her word for it and I'd try it. The fact that Beth, who to me was up there on a pedestal, again, it goes back to those words that I invariably say, which is a respect for the person first and then a respect for their work. But this respect was only based upon reputation, which is your Irish friend saying, "Well, he's all right." Well, okay, well, if he says you're all right, then, you know, you're in the club. There's an element to that. But you pointed to a eucalyptus tree. Is it at the entrance? And you said, "I remember planting that with..."
That's correct, yeah. Out in the dry garden, yeah. Yeah. A huge 60, 70-foot eucalyptus we planted when the dry garden was made, our gravel garden that Beth wrote about, back in 1991. So that's, what, 27 years ago. So that eucalyptus, 60, 70 feet, is 27 years old. So not a tree to plant too close to your suburban bungalow. But on the scale we have here, it's superb.
I always remember looking up when I was about 6, 7 years of age, and you have it out there. You had an old strand of the weight of bark peels. Mm-hmm. And I remember the comment was made that it always looks like somebody has thrown a pair of tights, and the pair of tights are the gardener's best friend, essentially, for staking trees, and or would have been back in the 80s anyway. But it always looked like that. It's just a bit of the bark has fallen off, and it looks like it's slightly traping across. We've just stood in. There's people in the background, people who work here as well with Dave, his colleagues and friends. I would find it hard to do one episode on Beth. And I think I'd find it nearly hard. It's impossible to put a garden with this much history. But I think history of people and the tales that go with it of "I remember planting that tree," it's impossible, but I obviously need to do that, because otherwise Dave would never get anything done in the garden. But we can't leave, and I've been very careful in asking you this, we can't leave it without noting Beth. I know there are the gardens there, and there's, should we dwell on that? We should.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, this was Beth's garden. It was her life's work. As you know, she passed away just in May this year. She was in her 95th year, looking forward to her 95th birthday. We had arranged for her 95th birthday a really big sort of symposium at the university where lots of people, and she was looking forward to that, meeting up with those people. But it wasn't to be. But we went ahead with the symposium, which was fantastic. We had 500 people come, and they came to the gardens in the evening as well. Even though Beth wasn't there, she was there. very much so. And she's left a wonderful legacy and big responsibility, of course, to carry on. We're about plants. You know, Beth was about plants. Her life was about plants. And we'll continue that way. We'll continue to move the garden forward, not just maintain it as it is, but change it as Beth did. She, you know, think like our wooden garden. We only created our wooden garden because of the October storm in 1987. So things like that crop up, opportunities crop up. But it's a big responsibility to carry forward in what is one of the best loved gardens, I think, in the country. Beth sadly passing away has just highlighted the regard that she, you know, is held within the, not only the gardening world, but all over, really. So it's great to welcome people like you here. It's really nice.
There's an importance. So there's a twofold for you. There's a phone ringing in the background. That's okay. But there's a twofold importance here. And the nail has just been hit on the head. Unknowns to me, got a call from a friend of mine saying, do you want to come down to the Beth Chadwick Gardens? And when I came down, Dave said to me, whilst we were walking from the plant sales area up to the shop to warm our toes because it's a little bit cold. And I said, were you expecting me? He went, oh, no, I was expecting you. So, but again, there's, how do you say it? It's a life's legacy to ensure that it continues on. I was going to say in brackets, what a legacy, but that is the case. And we're kind of back to that thing again, though, Dave, that I can have all of the dreams I want in the world of, in my case, going out looking for the little people playing music underneath the flowers. But you've got to turn around and say, well, gardens need people to come in, and this one is essentially no different. And I don't mean to be disrespectful in any way. Have I said and worded that correctly? Is that fair? Is that okay?
Absolutely. I mean, we're standing here in November, and it's pretty quiet. You know, we are very seasonal, as all gardens are and outdoor activities are. Most of our visitors come from sort of March till October, 50,000 or so a year that we count through the gardens. That's why we have to sort of diversify a bit. We obviously sell plants, that's what we're all about. That's the biggest, by far the biggest part of our business, but when we mail order them around the country as well. Even Beth in the early days understood that to pay the wages, etc. You had some money coming in. So obviously the garden brings in certain income, but the selling of plants and the nursery and many of the tributes to Beth after she died didn't only describe her as a gardener, described her as a nursery woman. And I know Beth would have been really proud of that because she did consider herself a good nursery woman. If some of her techniques were slightly different from what I was taught, say, at college. I always use the, when I first came here, I've been here for 35 years, I was used to using a Tina knife and Beth showed me her propagating kit, which consisted of a razor blade and a pack of plasters. And she would do the cuttings across her fingers.
Oh!
It was terrible, I tell you. But she had her own, and the pastors for. She had a unique way of propagating some plants. She would have been thrilled to have been noted as a nurserywoman as well as a gardener. And she was not a garden designer. That was one thing she didn't like being called. She was a gardener and a nurserywoman.
I think the note before we came on air, one of the greats who escaped me were one of Dave's first words, and I'm privileged and honoured to be here. And like all things in life, and hindsight's amazing, isn't it? Just where you turn around and say, well, I should have spent more time there and I should have done that a little bit differently. And in my life, according to anybody who I know, everything should have been done entirely differently apart from those things that relate to horticulture. I just hope I get the bits right in the middle. And I hope that I've done okay on this one because I've got my mum on one shoulder, and I did note that today earlier on. She'd box my ears if I got this one in any way wrong. And I'm overly conscious of it sometimes, as sure as I was when I was talking to Barbara about the late great Marcus, who we also spoke about off air. And I hope... And I think we've done okay on this one, Dave, as a first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. No, it's been really good having you here and showing you around the gardens. I hope it won't be too long before we see you again.
Dave, thanks so much. Really appreciate it very much.
No, thank you very much for coming. Appreciate it.